Since we are at the end of that Vacation Bible School week, I'd like to share with you a couple of things that were said by the children during that week. One teacher says when we were discussing baptism, one of the class members stated that she needed to be baptized every week to be forgiven for all she had done during the week. She said then she could start over each Monday. When the class was asked, well, they were talking about religious seasons, what is Lent? One student said, that's what you remove from the dryer. So we have some up-and-coming theologians in our church. We have a very special guest this morning, the father of Pauline Danby, who is visiting us from Nottingham, England. You will enjoy meeting him afterwards. We have not had a potpourri from this pulpit for a long time, so we announced one for this morning. A potpourri is a mixture of unrelated things that do not ordinarily get stirred in the same pot, a medley of topics. I do one occasionally when there is a buildup from what I read that is too light for a full-blown sermon, but still worth a few minutes on Sunday morning before it drops permanently into the wastebasket. So here are some comments on religion and the marketplace, on public piety versus quiet goodness, on the difference between being decent and being Christian, and a final note on heroism and humility. We need to remember, for the sake of sane and balanced minds, how much pure silliness there can be in religion, especially when it tries to mix a story of sacrificial love and kindness with capitalism. In Dallas, at the International Christian Booksellers Convention, one booth was occupied by a t-shirt family famous for changing popular slogans to include a Christian message. The one that almost made me lose my lunch read like this: "For all you do, his blood's for you." If that doesn't trivialize the cross, I don't know how you do it. And this marketplace mix of piety and profit had for sale Christian nail clippers, Christian combs, Jesus Saves bumper stickers, and a Praise the Lord overnight bag. You learn at one stall that a single company sells nearly 500 different kinds of Bibles, including one called the Little Bible for Little Hands. A salesman shows off a copy of the Ten Commandments of Bible selling, with commandment number 6 reading as follows: start with a Bible price just above what the customer indicated he is willing to spend, and then work down if necessary. A Bible is special, and customers are often willing to pay a little more than they expected to get better quality. It made me think of my college days when some of the boys would go out in the summer through the hill country of Arkansas, Missouri, Tennessee, and the Carolinas, peddling Bibles. Not Bibles in modern speech, but the 350-year-old language of the King James, which is the most difficult of all to read, and they would push these hard to people with not enough money for food and clothing, barely able to read the newspaper with comprehension, but with lots of religious feeling and a tender conscience if you stroke the leather cover and let the sunlight play off the gilded edges. The boys made big money. It puzzles people sometimes that I should seem to care so much about the silliness and occasional sleaze practiced in the name of religion. Just overlook it, they comfort me. And I begin to feel a little guilty and think of them as models of patience until they get a parking ticket or the next door neighbor waits too long to mow his lawn. We all have some low threshold of tolerance, and mine is pretty low when it comes to debasing religion by diluting it for the sake either of sales or votes. Videotapes were going great in Dallas. Among them, aerobics, taught by a beautiful believer in leotards. And there is a series of tapes called Gospel Bill and Friends, about a group of gospel-loving cowboys who tackle the West and do not really need their guns to survive. Fire a verse and not a bullet. Come back, John Wayne. I mentioned votes. Religion and patriotism are first mixed up and then parodied, put on and off like a poncho, by people who believe that the voting public is not very bright. Last fall, when the presidential campaign made the Pledge of Allegiance a burning issue, the House of Representatives suddenly decided it had better open the daily session with the pledge. The day it started, a House security guard who hadn't been prepped about this new ritual said, "What was that all about?" And what was it all about? Well, a lot of it, I'm afraid, had to do with who best observes the national pieties. Who proves in public how religious or patriotic she is? Who can most impress the voters by adherence to the rituals of civic religion? What that was all about is what it has always been about: ostentatious piety, about which, if you want to make a bet, you can nearly always win by betting that it's just about as deep as a piece of onion skin paper. The Bible, if we paid much attention to it, would stop us from that kind of nonsense. So let's take another look at that much praised and little read book and read a few verses that date back to when these debates about true religion first got started. Now it's public prayer or a pledge of allegiance. Then it was public fasting. Same difference. Listen to Isaiah as he reveals the mind of God. "We have fasted before you," say those who worship to the God of heaven. "Why aren't you impressed? Why don't you hear our prayers?" I'll tell you why, God answers, and then tells them that there is no reality in what they do. Their lips move, they say words, but their lives are unchanged. They give up food for a day or two, but they do not give up injustice or unkindness. Do you want to know what kind of fast I like? Isaiah's God asks them. The kind of fast, read public prayer, pledge of allegiance, church going. The kind of fast I want is that you stop oppressing those who work for you and treat them fairly and give them what they earn. I want you to share your food with the hungry. Take the homeless to your home. Clothe the naked when you see them. And stop turning away from your fellow human beings. Then when you call, the Lord will answer, "I am here." It can't be made any clearer than that, can it? Religion proves itself by how we treat other people, by what we do, and not by the words and gestures of public ceremony, including this one. The Bible has a simple rule to keep us from being fooled about these things. Would you like to hear it? You will be able to know, Christ said, what people are by the fruit they bear in their lives. Not by labels, but by fruit. That makes it all harder, of course, since talk is so much cheaper than action. And that leads me into my next brief segment. I was talking about anger one day from this pulpit in a series of sermons about the seven deadly sins. And a woman said to someone as she went out the door, "You know, I think Bob preaches those sermons to himself. I think he has a hard time being a Christian." A friend of mine who overheard thought I might enjoy that, and he was right. And so was the lady who made the comment. "I do preach sermons to myself, for myself. I judge your needs to be much the same as my own. I think we are all so much alike that if I preach to myself, I will preach to most of you. And yes, I have a hard time being a Christian." Doesn't everybody? In fact, as I told my friend, I have a hard enough time simply being decent on occasion, which is a far, far cry from being Christian. Our problem is we confuse those two things. Many of us who think we are Christian are really only decent, respectable, nice, good, fine. But Christianity is as far above decency as Mount Everest is above Coronado Heights. I don't mean to put down decency. It's quite an accomplishment to be decent. Most of the people I know, including the one I know best, are not always decent. They are petty at times and mean occasionally. Once in a while, even vindictive. They pass on nasty gossip. Sometimes they cut some friend down to size. They rejoice in someone's bad luck. They betray a person they claim to care about. So you see, if you just manage to be decent, you've done quite a lot. But decency was defined long before Christianity appeared. Christ called on people to do far more than that. Accept your righteousness, exceed that of the scribes and Pharisees, he said, you aren't really in the kingdom. They were decent, those religious leaders, and terribly proud of themselves. But the way of Christ calls for something far beyond decency. I know what it calls for. And that's why I so quickly admit to that woman that I have a hard time being a Christian. So do you, if you've made yourself a list of some of the requirements. Love your enemy. How well do you do that? Walk the second mile when you have to do some unpleasant thing. Turn the other cheek. Keep on loving, no matter how great the cost, no matter how small your return. Do you find those things easy? Could you go with Mother Teresa to India? Or Father Damien to the leper colony? Or Albert Schweitzer to the steaming jungle? I look to people like that when I want to define the word Christian. I won't implicate the rest of you in this if it makes for discomfort. I'll speak only of myself. And if you think I'm groveling or being falsely modest, you're wrong. I find it hard enough at times to be decent. I find it almost impossible at times to be Christian. I think it's possible that if I were fully Christian, in the deepest sense, I might not even be here. I might have to be somewhere else, doing something more difficult with my life. I only wish to say to you, don't pull your definition of Christian down to fit your life. Let it be what it was in that remarkable life we honor in this church, and let the difficulty of reaching it keep you humble and honest. Humble. One last short segment, this time about humility, about heroes, too, as opposed to celebrities. Do we know the difference? This is an age of celebrities. Because it is preeminently the age of the media. And celebrities are above all else the offspring of the media. Celebrities are creations of hype, puffed up by the constant calling of their names, given a shape in the same way we blow up an air mattress. All we have to do is hear a name often enough and see a face cleverly presented often enough, and we have a celebrity. People, for reasons I have never fathomed, stand in line to get autographs from these artificial creations. But a hero is quite another matter. And there are not nearly so many of them. Definition of a hero? One who is noted for deeds of courage or nobility of purpose, especially one who has risked or sacrificed life for a cause. Celebrities, on the other hand, having sprung up like mushrooms, generally have about as much thoughtfulness as a mushroom. They say silly things, not having had much practice in saying wise things. creatures of notoriety whose names are shouted until we begin to believe they must truly be important. By contrast, I was impressed by a British athlete some years ago who absolutely refused to put on the hero's mantle because of a brief moment of notoriety. He understood the difference. He knew even then, what I can prove right now, that his name would not last very long, even though everybody in that year was calling it. How many of you know who Sebastian Coe was? I see a hand or two, but not enough to ruin my thesis. And what he did? Well, what he did was to pull off one of the most amazing track performances in history one summer. He stood 5'9", weighed 129 pounds, not much of an athlete in these days of anabolic steroids, and he was self-deprecating. What a wonderful thing that can be. He described himself as thin, but fun. And for 1 year, he was the premier sports performer in the world. What he did during a remarkable 41-day span, this British middle-distance runner, was to set three world's records in the 800-meter, the mile, and the 1500-meter race. He became the first runner in history to hold three world marks at the same time. So the world hyped him, and reporters and photographers followed him, and he was so beautifully balanced in his life that he was totally realistic about what he had done. "I'm somebody," he said, "who has attained a certain narrow success in a field that, if you put it alongside everything else, is also narrow." I don't know where he is or what he's doing, but I would bet that he adjusted beautifully to anonymity and being forgotten, and is happy somewhere doing whatever work he does and smelling the roses. What a sense of priorities. I'm just somebody who has had a small success in a field that is really not as important as some people try to make it. If you really know the spirit of the kingdom of heaven, you can smell its fragrance in that remark. You can start to measure the difference between some boastful superstar and the modesty of those who know something of what it means to dwell in the kingdom of right relationships. You can begin to define, first of all, what it means to be decent, which is a harder thing to manage than some of us think, and then what it might mean to be like the Son of Man himself, which is to be a million light years on the far side of decency. Let's keep him there and not try to cut him down to size.